Well, I think like if we just kind of boil this discussion down, we want to keep it really simple. I mean, what's the main focal point we talk about in short game? Like,
low point throw the ball.
We control the bottom of the radius and control the circle. Like, our plane can be a little this way, our plane can be a little that way, but if we control that circle.
Struggling with your golf game, you need two things, my friend. You need some swing lube with some yacht water with real Reposado tequila, and you need to follow me over to Dew Sweepers TV. Come on. Let's go get better at the game of golf.
All right, so joining me here on the tour, Coach, we're live on location from, I guess this is Brooksville, Florida. We're having the golf.com summit, first night here. Always a pleasure to come. Ryan Webb, one of the really bright young teachers out there. I think everybody watching, I'll give him a follow. And I'm excited for you guys to talk to him a little bit. He's been, we've been picking each other's brain, and he's done such a good job. My good friend Wayne Flitt, mentor, back in the Top 100. We're going to introduce him again into the Golf Magazine Top 100 tomorrow night. And Todd Sons, Golf Magazine Top 100, Top 50, short game legend. You are, I mean, you fit me for a putter one time on the PGA show.
Did I really?
Yeah.
When was that?
That was when you had that putter.
I own the Couture?
Couture.
Uh-huh.
I rolled the shit out of it. Anyway, so I thought this would be great. This evening to just talk a little bit about the importance of teaching short game. I thought it'd be, because this is like, obviously, when we have a lot of young teachers that listen to this, a lot of teachers, but we also have a lot of the really serious, somebody sent me an AI report that Googled like our podcast and stuff, and they said it was the niche for people that were serious about real serious instruction, right? That's what they said, right?
Cool.
So, which I think is kind of what we set out to do. So I thought it'd be cool. Like, let's talk a little bit about, like, so it's for teachers, but also for people that really want to get better. Let's start with you, because you, I mean, there's nobody I know better just doing short game and putting. Like I said, gave me a putting lesson at the PGA show once. You're doing a lot of great stuff in Cleveland. Never compromise. I've been with Cleveland for 24 years now, Cleveland Strict Sun. So let's start with you and talk about, you know, kind of talk a little bit about the teacher perspective, but also short game stuff that can help regular golfers.
Now, here's the thing. So, like, a little bit about my background. You know, I was a director of golf at a place called Conway Farms, right, until 1997. And then I started my school. And like everybody, I want to teach golf. My schools were full swing drivers, Myers, show of games, and part of the circle. And pretty quickly, I realized, and like you would understand this, like a regional school, you're building clientele.
Mm-hmm.
And that means people have to return.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very different than a destination school. People go for 3 days, they're gone, they don't come back. It's, you know, your return on a destination school is like 10%,
mm-hmm.
right? Our return mm-hmm. is in regional schools like 75%. So, bottom line is those people have to get better. The way I qualify getting better is score. It's a score. It's a score driving. You know, because how many people say I'm hitting the ball better, and then they're like, I'm not really scoring that much better. You watch them, their swing's better, they're hitting the ball better. It looks better. But the numbers aren't really changing. And then I just started thinking logistics, like any business, look at the logistics. 40% of your score is putting. We all know that. What do people really do about it? Not much. And then 30% of your score is based on the edge of the green to about 50 yards out. That's 70% of your score. And yet we all know that 90% of the golf lessons out there, probably more than our full swing lessons, just doesn't
matter. No, 1,000%.
So I started thinking, I'm going to get people to help people putt better. Right? You know, you learn by experience. And this is really important, I think, as you're coming up. And you are becoming this really... You got a great opportunity in place to help a lot of people. And what I really quickly realized is when people's number changes on the scorecard, your business grows.
Oh, for
and sure. You have a hell of a lot more fun. I mean, is there anything better than a guy who shoots in the mid-90s going, I shot 85, I've never.
Webb just said that earlier. We were talking about
anything. Is there anything better than that? And then it's not a one-time thing. It comes back 2 weeks later and he's like, I shot 83. You know, and so what I realized about it is that, okay, you want people to make more putts, but the bottom line is if you're putting from 6 feet instead of 15 feet, you're going to make a lot more putts, even if you don't become a better putter. And so I really think chipping and pitching is the fastest way. I think it's the lowest hanging fruit for people to get better. So anyway, from teaching chipping and pitching more and more, and I like teaching pitching off indoor environments, off mats, because it's tight lies, right? Tight lies off mats really help people to understand. Think about chipping and pitching. You understand an angle approach. You understand the bottom of the golf swing. Okay. You start to learn where your hands are, because where the club face is, where your hands are, you better have a good grip. So you start teaching all the fundamentals, but everybody's moving a lot slower. They start to feel, you know, I'm supposed to be a little bit of a sling right now because I had rotator cuff surgery, so I'm watching a lot more TV than I would watch for 5 days, right? Sitting there trying to be patient. And I watched this one thing about Tiger Woods talking about his short game. He's working 4 or 5 hours a day on his short game. And I'm thinking, that's where you develop your hands. That's where you develop the feel of the club. And that's where you develop, understand the bottom of the golf swing. And he's like, well, I try to get a 4 and 6 iron and do all these feel things. I'm like, you know, how much better would people be if they just really worked on the short shots around the green with their hands in there?
See, I think, and I agree 1,000%. And I think that, like, we just recently went to the funeral of Tom Ness, or I went to the funeral of Tom Ness, a great golf machine teacher, right? And they get a bad rap, but he would always, I remember my times with him, he would always talk about educated hands. And he'd have you teach people hitting a little chip, then a little pitch, and then a bigger pitch, and learning to do it with your pivot, but teaching your hands what to do to get the low point in the correct spot. And then it was just from there. Now make a little bigger turn back and a little bigger turn through. And I mean, I think if you're a recreational golfer, I do it with tour players, but I think that's a phenomenal way to get your club member or get your recreational golfer going, is to get them to hit little chips and know where the finish position is, what the hands are supposed to be like, know what low point is, and then work it way up. I mean, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, you can actually get students doing something at greatest speed where they can control it.
And feel it.
And then start to feel it. And then feel becomes what they understand and learn to be able to do and recognize it and be able to, you know, accomplish it more and more and more often. You know, when you go 100 miles an hour, I mean, you don't feel anything other than you just went real fast.
I got no 100 miles an hour left.
I mean, you just went real fast and you ran into something, you know, club ran into the wall and they don't really know what they did. And so, you know, you start getting them aware of what, you know, what their hands are doing to control the club face, what the club face is doing when it hits the ball and then runs into the ground. I mean, then they have a chance. They've got a chance to learn to move the club, you know, in sync, in rhythm with their club and their arms and their body. They can get everything working together and they can actually accomplish a goal. You know, I tell people all the time, I want you to accomplish the task that we're trying to learn how to do it.
Yeah.
When we're trying to change patterns, we're trying to learn how to do new things. And the only way to really learn to do something is to do it. So you have to accomplish the task. Doesn't mean you have to do it 50 miles an hour, 100 miles an hour. Just accomplish it and learn to make it a habit, something that you can produce time and time again. I think that's a huge thing in short game, for sure.
What are the common errors that you see recreational golfers, if you know, if you're going to Ryan's club in Raleigh, awesome club by the way, and you were going to say, I went there one time, we had probably 18 to 20 folks come through for the 2 days. Like, what are the common things you tend to see in that recreational golfers are missing, don't do, or that you kind of like go in and you fix and clean up kind of easy? Way people can, because I think people think sometimes fixing their short games way harder and more complicated than it is. Whereas I think like you can make a few things, a lot of the setup changes, and have a bunch of impact.
And the amazing thing is, like I said, when they learn how to hit a quality, you know, chip shot, and they learn the hand position that they need to be in the chip shot, they're understanding the impact in a way they could never feel at the full swing, at the speed. So all of a sudden, they start educating their hands, and then in their subconscious, their hands start to know how to behave, right? And their ball striking gets better. But like, this is, you know, to answer your question, I would say by far the most important thing at the beginning is teaching people where the bottom of the swing is, because most people's bottom is way behind the golf ball. And I always say there's two things that kill a short game: lateral and lag. You know, so any of this, you know, where they drive their legs, everybody goes this way. You know, so here's a cool thing you can kind of visualize even here. Like, I would get 10 people in all
this good here,
and I would give a bucket of water. All right, so I got 10 people in a bucket. I want you to hand that bucket to that guy without spilling it. He's like this. Where's his way? It's on his left side. Now, when people go this way,
they dump it.
And that's the bottom of the last one's not burning. So just getting people understanding. And the sequence, I think, the thing that people don't understand about the short game is the kinematic sequence is the opposite of power. I would say there's power sequences and finesse sequences. Power comes from when we use the ground, right? We're going to push against the ground, chest, arm. You know, we've heard that forever. Well, that same sequence is dead in the short game. Because if I start pushing with the ground and the club lags, now the club's got to catch up. Well, if I have enough speed, the ball's going to go too far. So my brain's going, I got to back up. And so now I'm decelerating, I'm hanging back, and I'm swinging up on the ball. And the other thing that I think is important is loft. So I think a lot of people, when they're trying to hit the ball in the air, I always tell people, if you need loft, you better not do it in the downswing. So if I need loft, I'm going to set the face. And I always teach with a pointer and show people, hey, when you open the face of the wedge, it doesn't go over there, it goes up, right? And so, and if I need loft, you know, I'm going to get loft in the backswing so I don't have to add it in the downswing. So if I need loft, I better have it back here so I can go ahead and release the club with a loft on it. You know, there's different release patterns.
I think the more you can do going back,
absolutely,
the better.
You can't do it in the downswing. You got to accelerate. You got to go through it, release it the proper way for the shot you're trying to hit it. You know, and then I teach people, this might seem complicated, but it's not. I teach people, like in chipping, I'll let them run the grip more through their palm, and I'll teach them what's ulnar. It's as simple as this. There's radial deviation, you know, the way I teach them. There's radial, there's neutral, there's ulnar. Well, radial is as simple as this. If I'm going to hit a nail, I'm going in the radial, right? When I hit the nail, I'm an ulnar. Simple. Boom. Right? So this to me is chipping. That's chipping. That's pitching. That's lock. So if I'm going to lock the golf ball, I'm going to let people put the club a little more in the fingers. If I want to pitch the ball, I'm going to have the club like I would with a normal shot. So, you know, I'm going to chip the ball. I'm going to have the club run a little bit through the palm and have a wrist involved. And then I'm like, whatever wrist position you set at address, I want you to maintain the backswing. So if I set it here, I want to maintain that in the backswing, chipping, pitching, lock. Mm-hmm. Right? And then whatever you are in the backswing, I need to be a mirror of the forward swing. So if I want to lob a golf ball, I got to release it into that position, right? Extension. If I'm going to chip the golf ball, I'm going to go here and I'm going to release it in that way. If I'm going to pitch the golf ball, I'm going to release it this way.
So you're changing wrist conditions based on grip pattern.
Yeah. Just by moving that grip within the hand, right. it's usually very enlightening. And then I'll tell you a sort of quick story that I learned. This happened 15 years ago. I had a guy flying from Connecticut. Who's a, you know, we hear it. I'm in two-handed. Yeah. Until you can, and I'm thinking.
I've heard that
a few times. So I'm like, hey, just.
Heard it the other day.
Yeah, he flew into get chippy. But he said, I'm a really good ball striker. And so I said, well, let me see that. And I'm like, dang, this guy's got good action. He was a good ball striker. And then we go into chip off tight line. I'm like, oh, he's not kidding. He's really bad.
he's really bad.
And so anyway, you know, I go through the, you know, stand of the handle. Like another thing I always see is people put the handle forward of the chest. I'm big on making sure the handle points at the center. You know, so if the handle's here, my left shoulder's high, my trail shoulder's low, I'm gonna bottom out early. So I stand of the handle, sequencing, you know, those are two majors. So I did that with him and it didn't matter. He still was just flinching at it. And I took a video, and I showed him. I said, you're literally letting go of the club. And he goes, I don't know. I've heard forever hold the club like it's a live bird. And I'm like, well, do you know what the whole statement was? I said, no. I said, well, Sam Snead said it. He said, hold the club like a live bird, so you're gonna hit the ball and snap its head off. That's what Sam Snead really said. Right. So I said, the bottom line is your grip pressure shouldn't be the same. It should be tighter. It impacts. And I said, I just want you to squeeze the club at the bottom when you're hitting the ball, when you come down, start squeezing the club and hang on to it. And he started chipping. He goes, I flew however many miles from Kenai to get to Chicago for you to tell me the whole club there. I said, well, that's what you need to hear. And now you're good. So
that's awesome.
It's pretty cool, right? Grip pressure. Yeah. So I always teach increasing grip pressure. I think a lot of amateurs have a decrease in grip pressure. They grip it too tight. And then as they get to the ball, they let go. And I think they need to be nice and relaxed and oily. And as they hit the ball, they need to learn to firm it up.
Let me ask you this. There's a lot of talk in our industry about steep or shallow, different ways to do it. And I'm going to say what I think, and I'd love your opinion and go around.
Okay.
And I'm not saying anybody's wrong or right. I'm not getting into the pissing contest. I think the best players in the world are both, based on the lie and the shot. I don't think the best, like, I've been very fortunate to be out there, be it to majors and all that. And I don't see the best players in the world go to one shot all the time. They look at the lie. They look at where they're trying to land it. And to me, the lie dictates what they can do. Then from there, it's where can they land it? And then they pick the club back and the shot.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts, man? Because I know there's all this kind of, oh, you got to go down and up, and you got to be, our attack angle's crazy steep, but we still hit it. And this, then there's got to be shallow. Like, man, I just see people doing it. I see the best players in the world doing all.
I think it's exactly what you just said. And this is what I think our tour players out there that are better at shallow, and our tour players that are better at steep, you know, and define it. Well, what's shallow? 5 degrees? What's steep? 15 degrees? So when people say that's gotta be steep and you gotta be shallow, what bowl? You gotta have the bottom of a golf swing in front of a golf ball.
That's either way, no matter which way.
No matter what. And so then I would say, look, you've got to assess the lie. You've got to know what's behind the ball, what's under the ball, and what's in front of it. And I tell people, I'm like, look, if I put a ball in this concrete and you came at it steep, what would happen? The club would bounce right at the ball. Forget it, right? So if you've got a firm surface underneath the golf ball, you better not come at it, right? You better come at it where the club can glide a little bit. Now, if the ball's down in heavy rough, well, if it's in heavy rough, there's grass underneath the golf ball before it can hit the hard part of the ground, right? And so then I can come at it a little steeper because there's some give underneath the golf ball, right? More in sand. So I'm like, exactly what you said. I think if you're going to be great around the green, you got to assess the ball, assess the shot, back into this. And then I think it's really important. This is really for everybody here. You got to commit. If you're standing over the golf ball and you're thinking, maybe I should be doing this, I'm like, maybe it's not the thought.
Yeah, it's a bad one.
It's a bad one, right? So it's like, you know, even if you're wrong, I'd rather be committed to the wrong thing or maybe not the best choice than uncommitted to the what you think is the right choice. So look at the lie, figure out what's, try to find or figure out what's underneath it, like how soon that ball is against the surface of the concrete, right? Yeah. And then once you understand that, you can understand, okay, well, steep, whatever. And then, of course, people will know how to make them steep. You know, they start telling me, well, you have to move this way to make them steep. I'm like, okay, that's, you know, then you got to move up. I'm like, okay, tell it to the average guy's going to play it.
That's right.
Driving crazy. Like, really? The guy that practices
the ones. Yeah, and I think you also have to really take into account, like, we're all lucky we teach really good players. But where are we made? The bulk of our business is helping regular people that really want to get better at the game of golf come to us.
Yeah.
And I know anybody can post on Instagram the guy that does the extreme and it's a shit. But can he do it 7 times out there, you know, on either side? This is a guy, like, you know, I mean, it's like, to me, it all really circles back to where we started about, like, educated hands, getting the low point in front. Like, I mean, my advice to him, not that he needs it anymore, he's doing the work, but, like, it's like, man, like, when you're teaching everyone, you can figure out how to get them set up and get them to move that way to where the low point's in front of the ball. Every damn one of them. When I went back to him when I was starting his teaching, and Hank Johnson, and they said to me, if you can get their grips on it, you can get the face relatively square, and you can get them to make a divot in front of the ball, and you'll make it literally. And I was like, I couldn't make a living at that point. That's all that mattered.
Yeah.
And it was a life changer, right? Because that's what it was.
Yeah.
Like, and people made fun of me. Oh, that's all deal. Like, shit. I mean, until you can do that, what the hell does the rest of it
mean? Yeah.
You know, what would you give Wayne? And I'm going to go to youth and then Wayne. What advice would you give him to teach him his club members about how to make them better chippers and fun?
Well, we just said, I mean, you know, and I think being creative, you know, one of the things I think that I get concerned about as a young teacher is, you know, my son is a young teacher. And
he's right here.
He's right here listening, right? And he's going to be at the top. Well, so there's a lot of young teachers and they live by track and they live by the numbers and they talk the language. And I'm like, you know, TrackMan and that kind of data is for instruments to tell you what is going on. I've always said the solution is not in the one ever. It's never in the what, it's in the why. Why is it steep? Why is the plug coming inside? Why is it doing this? So that's never tell someone. Another thing I will say is don't give information. Information without a solution is confusion. So if I tell someone what's wrong and they're gossiping and I can't give them a solution that they can play it off when they get better, right? I'm not helping them. So I'm like keeping simple instruction, keeping your instruction simple. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But when people walk away from them, they go, got it, I can do it.
Yeah.
So make them repeat it, give them drills, so they know. However you need, whatever you need to accomplish, they need to have things they can feel that they can do, they can work on.
Well, I think like if we just kind of boiled this discussion down, we want to keep it really simple. I mean, like, what's the main focal point we talk about? Short game, like,
low point
growth. We control the bottom of the radius and control the circle. Like our plane can be a little this way, our plane can be a little that way, but if we control that circle,
yeah,
it'd be pretty good.
We're the game. If you can't control it, like until you control the bottom, there's no reason. And I always think, like, when you did King comes back from John Jacobs, he said, you know, he's the one who originally said, we teach cats in the box. You remember that? Mm-hmm. So you throw a cat in here, how's it land? Lands on its feet. Throw a dog in here, how's it land? It lands on its back. And he said, so you take a guy who's not very athletic, and then you throw in he's or she. It's taking care of children, is working, right? Blah, blah, blah. They can practice 1 hour a week. So you got a dog who can't practice much, and you're asking to do this crazy stuff with a dog. It's not going to happen. And it's different because when we're out there teaching top players, they're cats. They just are, right? And so, and I'll put myself in the dog category. I got to practice a lot to do things that when I see people, like my son's very coordinated, he can do things pretty quickly. And so he's much more in the cat. That's just the reality of it. But realizing who you teach and how much time they have to practice and what they can really do, you know, are you giving them the information that what they can do, apply, and get better is, I think, really important. I think you have to be a chameleon to be a great teacher. Teaching short game, teaching one way is wrong. Right? So I think you have to be a chameleon and really mold yourself to the person with.
I just think you can do a lot of good for a person like by keeping it simple.
Even the best player.
Even the best player. I had a tour player come to me the other day for whatever console or watch. And for 2 hours I just fixed that posture and I stood.
Yeah.
Right? And he was like, wow, that was a crazy
thing. It had a huge influence on
a few balance points. Right. And all the pictures, you're like, wow, shit, that's great. Right? Like, it does. I think, like, it doesn't, and Ryan and I have talked so many times, but, like, it doesn't have to, and I learned this from him, but, like, it doesn't have to be complicated sound to be the right information or to be able to help someone. You know?
I think
sometimes. You go to your trash can, whereas I think, like, people start spewing out in access, this and that. Like, I mean, does Joe and Mary Sixpack need to know about spin axis?
Well, I think it's all relative to the player, too.
Yeah.
Like, that player probably thinks, like, oh, well, this is, like, me just working on this simple thing is pretty complex.
Yeah.
Right? Where we can look at data and stuff like that and look at that as complex. So, I mean, there's two different ways to look at it.
Sometimes I think data can be, like, tracking stuff. You can almost use that to say, look, you're doing much better, right? That's all. I don't know that people need, like, when I've got MRI done with my shoulders and stuff, it's like, and Dr. Girls, you know, see this and see this, and I go like this. Yeah, I see them inside a plump, or see it, it's a black, it's a white, or all, but you're looking at, you know, how many people do that with us? You understand, they go, yeah, But what's that? Well, there's no freaking beach you're
talking about. You're right. You're right.
Well, see, keep it simple, right?
What's a bigger measurable for you just at your shoulder? Would it be a mobility test or a field test?
It's really weird. We'd have to get into really complicated about my shoulder.
Or just for you specifically, like if I was like, okay, 2 weeks down the road, like, what would be more meaningful for you? Like I feel better this way or my measurable is better this way?
For me, it's literally MRIs. It's complicated. I have some neurological problems where I literally can't feel.
Gotcha.
So it's like, and that's the problem when I do therapy is like, little scars and all that. Like I've had this shoulder done twice. Both times it's failed because we've gone too far. Because I have no stop.
Gotcha.
Like I had shoulder surgeries with no nerve block, no medicine.
I think the point I'm kind of trying to think of is just like, would it be better to get detail back in data or back in the field?
Feel for sure.
For sure.
For the average person. 100%. Validation that is fine.
Yes.
If it helps. You know, I think an important thing that really good teachers instill is confidence.
Yeah.
Because if a student walks away from you and they're not confident in what you told them, if they're not confident in you, what you told them, or themselves, then they're going to fail. Mm-hmm. They got to walk away with those three. They got to be confident in you, in your information, and that I can do it.
Well, when you're young and starting out, you don't have a track record. You have to do a real good job.
Yeah.
I mean, really. I hate to say it, but you don't have the track record.
Results.
Right? And where they buy into it a little bit, they just believe it because you've had a lot of success, so you've got to really be able to prove it.
Yeah.
You know?
It's interesting that, like, yeah, I think the way to present yourself on the team, like, mm-hmm. you're looking at like this guy's profession. Look, wow. Yeah. I think that's really important. Like,
oh, for sure.
You know, I was talking about my son that I had, or Schreiber over there, right? Adam looks like a gypsy, right?
He's our gypsy, but
no, in a really good way. I'm saying this because Adam is the real deal. He can really teach. And he can look like he wants to look because he's at it. And he starts talking, you're like, this guy knows stuff. And Butch Harmon can walk out in a cut-off shorts and a t-shirt, and I'd listen, right? Now, I'm not listening to myself if I walk out like that. So I just think, you presented a very professional.
I just need to learn, right?
Yes. That's my point. So when you look at them and go, well, I look at him. He's doing that. I'm like, well, that's because he knows what he's bringing to the world. And he's got an established credibility. And it's a way there. So that I think when young teachers look at some great teachers like Adam, you go, well, I can learn hoodie and I can do this. I'm like, that's
it. And I also know if they get Adam started up the way, right? Would he work for Led?
Yeah, he did. You know,
he didn't dress like that for Led.
Right.
And
that's my point too.
Yeah, and Shrives is one of the great teachers in the game, and he's a good friend, and I utmost respect for him. Like, and I think there is a great part of getting to where you're authentic and you're who you are, but you also need some development to get to that point. If you show up in a t-shirt and a hoodie and you've never made anybody good, and you're just standing on a range, you're probably not going to carry that influence.
Right.
Because in the end, kind of where you start with this whole thing is it really all comes down to make people score better and play better golf. I mean, in the end, that's what the whole deal is. Right. And I couldn't agree more. Like, I think that early in my career, one of the things him and Hank impressed on me was like, not just making them swing better, but helping people learn how to play better. And when I was starting, I didn't have a ton of business. I mean, I was busier than some of the folks, but like, I had time to go out there on the golf course and play a few holes. Show them how to play. People got to where they shot a better nine, or they got to where they they made their first birdie or whatever. That's who you're teaching when you start. You know, like, and those people come back. I still get notes and messages from them, whatever. So it's a big deal. So last part, parting shots for Webb. What would you tell him about teaching his members short game?
Well, I think you for sure have to know who's standing in front of you. Before you start spewing data or whatever, if you've got a person who's a 28 handicapper, they probably don't need to know any of that. They need to learn to do it all, but don't need to know it. They probably need to learn more about how to get that fuzzy bottom.
Absolutely.
Of the circle in the same place every time. You know? And I think you, I think I said the other day on a podcast when I've been to you, I think are those guys in North Alabama, maybe, I don't know. But I said, I think the thing that really great teachers will do better than the average teachers is I think they get to who's in front of them quicker and more accurate.
Yeah,
I think they get out of that knowing who's in front of them. And then they know, you know, that they can switch.
They have a good deck at that.
I think that, yeah.
Then that comes good. The bottom line comes from experience.
Yeah.
The more people you see and read it quicker.
You know, I remember Danny Slove, you know, before he passed away in the plane crash, he said that you got to be around great teachers, become a great teacher. And you got to really pay attention. And he said, then you got to teach a whole lot of golf. And, you know, so I don't think there's any way around it.
You can't replace the teaching a lot of lessons. Right? Yeah. And that's one thing, not to get off on a tangent about our industry, but like the young folks that are like, well, I want to teach too. Like, you haven't taught anybody to break 80 yet. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, but we see it. Like, yeah. Guys, like, I said, like, because I want to teach tour players. Why would it get somebody to win a club championship?
I'll tell you why that, my philosophy and why that is because they're like, they're more interested in themselves.
That's great. You're right.
And it's like, the tour player will bring me to where I want to be, and then they'll arrive and all that. It's like, just fall in love with helping the person in front of you. I'm right on my gravestone. You help the guy in front of
me. Right.
Period. And just keep doing that, keep doing that, keep doing that, and it will lead to wherever you want to go.
Right.
Yeah. So
there's a teacher that's always complaining. You know, tour players, there's a conspiracy. They only go see the same people. I disagree. I think if you're really good at making people better, the best players in the world are front.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they're making, it's just worth $4 million in a week. If you're really good at making people better, somebody's going to find you. Right? Like, quit posting diatribes, go post somebody winning a club championship, right? They'll start finding you.
Yeah.
So I think that's, anyways, this was all time. I'm so glad we ran into you in the hallway. This is awesome.
Talking to my new wife.
Right? Yeah, my gosh. Big news, new wife. Congrats to your son being in the business. Good, glad to have you sitting in and watch us. Webb, keep doing all the good stuff you're doing out there, bro. So
I got one more thing for you.
Yo, I want to hear it.
Because, well, you hit on. Go on the golf course.
Yeah.
Go on the golf course. You know, I did this school. I learned a really good lesson. This was a long time ago, 15 years ago. I did a two-day school at the Golf Club of Tennessee, or Nashville. I forget.
It's Golf Club of Tennessee.
Tennessee, yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I did this school, and I'm thinking I did this great job teaching, chipping, pitching, putting, whatever. And I take the group out to the golf course, and like my quiz, I'm looking, okay, what club are you going to play with here? What shot are you going to play? And they're like, you know, we're like, 10 yards off the green, it's flat, it's 40 yards to the hole. They're like, I'm going to hit lob shot. I'm like, so people need to learn how to, what strategy. Yeah. I mean, you can teach the shot, but you need to go on the golf course and say, in this situation, this is the shot you should play, and this is the club you should play. I think people need to be taught golf.
Well, course. Again, that's the person who's in front of you, and you've got to give them appropriate information.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if you've got people that don't know how to fish and running on the green, they need to learn that. That's appropriate for their skill level. And then if you've got a guy that comes and he's got a score very hard and he's trying to get his tour card, well, you better be able to, you know, approach with some knowledge of data and pressure plates, track man numbers, and all those things that would really, you know, fine tune those guys. So that's the art of teaching. Who do I have here? And how do I do my job?
How do I lower that number?
That's right.
On this guy. 100%.
This guy right here in front of us.
Yeah.
Or yeah.
That's right.
Awesome stuff. Todd, thanks for sitting in. Great to meet you. Give you a handshake with you, Bad Weber.
Yes.
You're the best. Wayno. We're going to do this again tomorrow during the day. We're going to pull some folks aside. So appreciate everybody watching the Tour Coach. And drink more yacht water, tequila drinks.